Okay, so this is Bio 231, and it is March 22nd, and we're kind of in the middle of the introductory lecture on nervous system, so we're going to finish that off today, and then go on to central nervous system next time, and guess what? Ooh, no SI today. Hopefully everybody's okay. I don't know why there's no SI today, but anyway, thanks for letting us know. Okay, so let's see. Let me just look at the schedule right here. 22nd, yeah, we're supposed to have nervous system. Then we got spring break next week, but make sure you study every day during spring break, because this is your time to really do well in the class. As a matter of fact, I think most students would say nervous system is the hardest part of the class. So, and that's because you're just not used to looking at people's brains and things like that. It just looks weird, right? Bones, you kind of know a little bit by looking at people, right? You know something about the mandible and forearm and things like that, but the brain is totally foreign to most students. So study just a little bit every day, all right? And then when we come back, the Wednesday after we come back, that's April 7th, we got an exam on muscles and the introductory chapter on nervous system. And then we're going to get our fourth exam pretty soon at the end of April, covering the rest of the nervous system. So now's the time to really look at nervous system extensively. So Wednesday, practicum start on muscles as well. And don't forget, here is the sign-in sheet. So go ahead and pass this around in just a little bit. Okay, Blackboard, at least my impression of Blackboard is that it's been pretty flaky in the evening still. So even though that one day, I know that one Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday, was really, really bad. I went back and I looked at everybody's quizzes, and if it looked like you bombed it because the Blackboard wasn't working, I cleared your grade, or I didn't give you credit for it and allow you to go back in and do the quiz again until tomorrow. All right, and so that means maybe you got to do two quizzes by tomorrow night, last week's quiz and this week's quiz. And I was just on Blackboard right now, and in the morning it seems to be working really nice and fast. So it's best probably for you to take the quizzes and work on Blackboard in the morning if you can. But if you're going to do it in the evening, do it early. Probably before 6 is good, or certainly before 8 o'clock, because after 8 o'clock I can't even get onto Blackboard and program it and activate certain things. So if you wait until 10:30 to do the quiz, I think that's going to be a big problem. And I don't know if they're going to fix Blackboard or not. I'm not sure anybody knows what's wrong with it to fix it. All right, so if that continues to be a big problem, then I'm going to reschedule the due time from 11 o'clock at night to earlier in the day, just to force everybody to take the quiz earlier. All right, so hopefully you'll just do it early on your own, right? And then you won't be bothered by the delays in Blackboard. Sorry about that. That's kind of a pain until they get that figured out. Okay. So any questions? Any questions? No? Okay. All right. So let's move on with nervous system. And we were talking about cells of the nervous system, I think, last time. All right. And there are basically two kinds of cells that make up the nervous system. Let's see, did I get to talk about that? I think so. There are neurons that transmit electrical information, and then there are neuroglia, right? And maybe even from the tissue chapter, if you remember that. So neuroglia support neurons in doing their job, and neurons are the ones that actually transmit electrical impulses, right? And so we were looking at a neuron, the structure of a neuron. So here is a nice exam figure that you should know. And this cell has kind of a funny shape to it. So if you're going to tell me something about the shape of the cell with the vocabulary that you know right now, how would you talk about the shape of the cell right here? What shapes do you know? You know squamous. You know cuboidal. And columnar. What kind of cell is that? Well, you know what? When you look at it, it's got all these things sticking out of it. It doesn't look like any of them, right? All right, and indeed, that's the point I'm trying to make. So here is a new kind of cell shape that doesn't fit into any of those easy categories. It's not columnar. It's not squamous. All right, those, what do we call a bump on something, like a bump on a bone? A process. Those things sticking out of that neuron right there are what we call processes as well. All right, but they're not for muscle attachment, obviously, in this particular case. They have different kinds of functions. They're for communication. All right, so these highly branched processes that are short, relatively short, these are what we call dendrites, and we see many dendrites on the cell. Dendrites are for receiving information. That's their whole job. So these dendrites communicate with other neurons because they're going to be receiving signals from other neurons. And then this center right here, this almost looks like a squamous cell right here. But, you know, it's not. It's not really flat. But it's kind of teardrop shaped. This is what we call the cell body or the soma of the cell. Soma means body. Uh-oh. Excuse me. And then this really long process right here, this is what we call an axon. And an axon is on the cell because this is the sending part of the neuron. It's going to send electrical information very long distances, maybe from your brain all the way down to the tip of your spinal cord, or from your spinal cord all the way down to the tip of your toe. So that can be an incredibly long cell, but still, in cross-section, this axon is still microscopic. You can't see it unless you have a microscope. And then right here you have the axon terminals. The axon terminals allow this neuron to communicate with another neuron that's going to be downstream from it. And we're going to take a look at that in just a little bit. As a matter of fact, maybe I define for you what the structural and functional unit of communication is between cells. Okay, that's a structural and functional unit. You know, and maybe we didn't get to it in this class. What's a structural and functional unit of life? A cell, that's right. If you're wondering if something's alive or not, you just think of a cell, but a cell's pretty complicated, right? So you got to be able to analyze a cell, tell me about some of its component parts. Okay, we're going to talk about the structural and functional unit of communication. All right, between cells, and we did look at a neuromuscular junction. All right, so that is one structural and functional unit where a neuron actually can communicate with a muscle cell and cause that muscle cell to contract. And this junction down here is going to be similar to that. All right, so dendrites are the receiving end. The cell body is also a receiving end of a neuron. The axon is the sending part. And notice that information in the form of electrical impulses can only go in one direction. And you see that arrow right up over there. So information can only go from dendrite to cell body and then down an axon to an axon terminus. That's the only way information can flow. Okay, this part right here of the neuron is what we call the axon hillock. This is a special little area. It kind of looks like a funnel because it is funneling information from all of these dendrites into the axon. So that's a special functional area of the neuron that we call the axon hillock. And all this substance inside the cell body right here, this is endoplasmic reticulum and a lot of ribosomes in this area right here. So what's the job of a ribosome? Yeah, protein synthesis. So this is a highly metabolic cell that is making a lot of proteins to transmit this information from one neuron to another. Okay, so the neuron is drawn right here with this gold color or yellow color, whatever color that is.
Yellow.
Green, I don't know. Okay, it's sort of in that family, right? Okay, but there's another kind of neuron, another kind of cell, nervous system cell that I see on this slide, and it's shown right here as these white pearls that are wrapping around the axon. So here's the axon, and here are some cells that are wrapping themselves around the axon. These are what we call neuroglia cells or support cells. Can you say neuroglia?
Neuroglia,
it's kind of weird pronunciation for a word. Okay. In particular, the names of these cells are called Schwann cells. And Schwann cells are what we find in the peripheral nervous system. What is going to be another part of your nervous system but does not include your peripheral nervous system? It's kind of a whole system sort of analogous to the peripheral nervous system but not in the periphery. What is that going to be called? Central nervous system, right? That's from that first picture that I showed you last time. So remember, structurally, you can break the nervous system down into central and peripheral nervous system. These Schwann cells we find in the peripheral nervous system, not central nervous system. And then for fun, tell me what makes up the central nervous system. Brain and spinal cord, right, that's where you're going to find central nervous system. All right, so these cells are not in the brain or spinal cord. They're in nerves running through your body. And you see that they're not continuous. There are gaps between these cells, and that gap right there is what we call a node of Ranvier. So you might wonder, why does this axon have these Schwann cells wrapped around it? Okay, well, a neuron is transmitting electrical information, kind of like a wire in your house, right? Maybe you have a wire that is connected to your toaster. In order for you to make toast, what do you got to do with that wire that's connected to your toaster? You got to plug it in, right? So you got to grab that wire and plug it into the electrical socket. And would you ever grab that wire if it didn't have insulation on it? No, you wouldn't, because you get burned or you get an electric shock or something like that. All right, so what's the job of all that plastic or rubber around those wires? Yeah, it keeps the electricity inside the wire instead of jumping out, for instance, into you if you were to touch it. Well, these Schwann cells act like insulation around the axon. So when there is an electrical signal in this axon, right, it has a tendency to keep the electrical signal in the axon so it doesn't leak out. And the Schwann cell produces a chemical called myelin. It's a lipid, and lipid is an insulator, and that prevents the leakage of electricity from the axon into the salt solution that is the extracellular space. Okay, so that's an important thing. So sometimes the string of Schwann cells right here, we say, forms a myelin sheath around the axon, right? So we've known a lot of different cells that produce different kinds of chemicals in here before. Like, what's the name of the cell that produces natural sunscreen? Can you remember that one? Melanocyte. And what's the chemical that a melanocyte makes? Melanin, yeah. All right, and then you know a really strong fiber that doesn't stretch. What's the name of the cell that makes that fiber that can't stretch? You guys are really close, really close, really close. It's a fibroblast. Remember fibroblast? All right, what's the name of the chemical that it makes? Collagen, yeah. Okay, well, here's just another cell, all right, a Schwann cell. And what's the chemical that a Schwann cell makes?
Myelin.
And that's myelin is a fat molecule, and that insulates this axon right here. Okay, let's talk about, okay, I think that's good for right now. I'm going to talk about that Schwann cell again in a little bit more detail right here. Okay. All right, so we got neurons and support cells. Let's talk about classifying neurons by their shape, and then we'll talk about what their function is as well. All right, so we've got three different kinds of neurons that we're going to look at, multipolar, bipolar, and unipolar. Let me go find these cells someplace. Right here. Okay. All right, so these are all neurons. And from this slide, I'm going to zoom in so we can get a better picture of this slide right here. Maybe too much. Okay. All right, so what about this slide tells you that these are neurons? Yeah, you see some dendrites. You see an axon right here, but basically what I wanted you just to see, I don't really key on color very much, but because what? They're yellow colored. All right, so remember the neurons were yellow colored and the neuroglia were kind of whitish, and I don't see any neuroglia anywhere on these cells right here. All right, so this cell right here is what we call a multipolar neuron. It's got a lot of dendrites coming off the cell body and a single axon going a long distance. And what we see over here on the right-hand side is a cross-section of the spinal cord. So you can see it's kind of oval shaped. That's inside the vertebral foramen, right? It goes up and down the vertebral column. And this cell body, With dendrites, we have in this part of the spinal cord, and then the axon leaves the spinal cord, it goes out between the vertebrae, and it forms a nerve, right? So what part of the nervous system is spinal cord right here? Central nervous system, that's right. And it leaves the central nervous system, and it goes where? To the? Well, the brain is up above. So to get to the brain, you'd either have to go down into the picture or up out of the picture. So I want to give you a little bit of an orientation. So this is not ascending or descending. This is leaving the spinal cord laterally, going into what part of your body? What part of the nervous system? Peripheral nervous system. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. So it's going out into the periphery laterally. And so this is a nerve. And nerves are made up of these neurons. So here's a neuron that's going to a muscle. And guess what that neuron can do to that muscle? Can get it to contract. All right, so it's going to cause some kind of motion. That motion is what we call a motor function, right? You could think of this muscle as being a little motor that's going to do something to contract. So this multipolar neuron right here starts in the central nervous system. The dendrites and cell body are in the central nervous system, namely the spinal cord, but it leaves the spinal cord to go to this muscle to tell it to contract. So we call that a motor neuron. All right, so one function of a multipolar neuron is that it can be a motor neuron. It can cause muscles to contract. That's an important function. All right, now what part of the nervous system in terms of function is a motor neuron? Is it afferent or efferent? Okay, we just basically brushed up against this last time, but we got to become really familiar with it. Is it a sensory or is it a motor neuron? Okay, it's a motor neuron, so that means it's an efferent neuron. What can you tell me about an afferent neuron? It's sensory. It's going to be flipped around compared to this one right here, right? It's going to be bringing information into the central nervous system is afferent. But a motor neuron is efferent, and what kinds of neurons can be motor neurons by their shape? Yeah, look at the slide right here. What are the three shapes of neurons that you got to know? Multipolar, bipolar, and unipolar. And an efferent or motor neuron is a multipolar neuron. Okay. All right, so that's the first kind of neuron. What's the second kind? Yeah, bipolar. Bipolar, we don't have a whole lot of bipolar neurons in our body. They've got a special function and they're associated with special senses in our body, like olfaction. Oh, what's the sense of olfaction? We're going to talk about that after the nervous system. Smell. And vision. Everybody knows vision. You have bipolar neurons in parts of your eyes. Okay, ears have bipolar neurons. So bipolar neurons, we don't have a lot of, but they're associated with special senses, like, for instance, vision. And a bipolar neuron, you can see it has some dendrites over here and a long process to the cell body. And then here is the axon. Again, it's very long. It's on the opposite side of the cell body. And then you can see these little swellings on the axon tips. Can you see any swellings on these axon terminals right here? You know I can. All right, let me zoom in. Can you see like a little pad right there? Yeah, okay, that's going to be important when we get to that in just a little bit. All right, and the same for these areas right here. So that's a good way you can tell the difference between a dendrite, which doesn't have the swellings, and an axon terminus right here because it has those swellings. All right, and then the third kind of cell, okay, is this unipolar. Now what kind of cell is this again? Is this a neuron or a support cell? That's a neuron. What's the job of a neuron? Send electrical impulses very fast over long distances. Okay, so here is another neuron. This is what we call a unipolar because let me zoom in. Sorry about clicking back and forth all the time. Here is just a single process coming out of the cell body, and What happens to that single short process after a really short distance? What happens to it? What do we call that? It splits. What do we call that splitting? starts with a B. Bifurcates, right? It bifurcates, it splits into two, all right, two processes. And this one right here we call the central process, and this is what we call the peripheral process. This cell body is not in the central nervous system, it's out in the periphery someplace, and this process goes maybe all the way to the surface of your skin, and they're going to be receiving information from the surface of your skin, like maybe pain or temperature, something like that. And then that's going to send that signal toward the central nervous system. So this is out in the periphery someplace, so we call that the peripheral process. And then it enters the spinal cord. What part of the nervous system is spinal cord? That's the central nervous system, so we call this the central process. And then it sends that signal to various nerves in the central nervous system. All right, so let me zoom back out again. Okay, so here's a nice example. Here's a skin with sensory receptors, and it is this kind of neuron right here, the unipolar neuron. All right, so here is a process of that unipolar neuron. What process is this right here? Okay, what are the two kinds of processes on this neuron? Peripheral versus central. Where do you see this process? In the central nervous system or peripheral nervous system? Yeah. So this is the peripheral process, and it joins this nerve, and you can see it's bringing information to the spinal cord. And what part of the nervous system is spinal cord? Central nervous system. So it's bringing information into the central nervous system. All right, so is this a motor or sensory neuron? It's sensory because it's bringing information from the periphery into the central nervous system. And look, here we have a bulge in this nerve that's going into the spinal cord, and that's where we have this cell body. Right? Now, you just don't have one nerve coming into the spinal cord at this level. You have thousands, maybe tens of thousands of nerves. So you're going to have thousands or tens of thousands of nerve cell bodies right there, and that's what forms a little bulge. So I want to give you a definition for a group of nerve cell bodies. Remember, there's going to be thousands and thousands of these nerve cell bodies right there. Whenever there's a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system, we call that a ganglion. Ganglion. All right, so here is the ganglion of all of these sensory nerves bringing information into the spinal cord. Now, this nerve right here, this sensory neuron, is that an afferent or efferent neuron?
Afferent.
It's going to be afferent, right? So a unipolar neuron is always going to be afferent. All right, so those are the three kinds of nerves and where you find them and basically what they're doing in the body. Okay, this multipolar neuron we see is a nice motor neuron, but there's another use for these multipolar neurons as well. And I want to zoom into this region. Here we have that cross-section of the spinal cord. Here is a short neuron. This one right here is carrying information from one part of the central nervous system to the other. No part of this neuron right here is ever found in the peripheral nervous system. So sometimes we call that an interneuron or an association neuron. These are also multipolar neurons. So multipolar can be association neurons or motor neurons, either one of those. Bipolars are for special sense. Unipolar are for sensory functions. All right, so that's how I want you to think of these. And guess what I got? I got a flash quiz that we're going to do one of these days, maybe at the end of class today, okay, where we can practice these things. Okay, so what did we talk about? Yeah, multipolar, bipolar, unipolar. Here are those functions, right? Sensory or afferent neuron by shape. What kind of shape does an afferent neuron have? I'm just checking to see if you're kind of tracking with me here. What's the shape of a sensory neuron? Unipolar. What's the shape of a motor or efferent neuron? Multipolar. And then it's not on your list right here. What about for special senses? What kind of neurons are involved with vision? the bipolar, right? Now here is another one, interneurons or association neurons. What's the shape of an association neuron? That's going to be multipolar as well, just like the motor neuron right here. Okay, a second kind of cell, besides neurons, don't forget, are what kind? Are neuroglia cells, right? Or support cells. And we talked about the Schwann cells already, right? So, what kind of neuron does this look like to you? That's a multipolar, right? And so this is a good example of a motor neuron. This would be in the central nervous system. The axon is going out into the peripheral nervous system, and here you see the Schwann cells. That's a support cell forming a myelin sheath around this axon right here. All right, so where do you find these Schwann cells? In the axon? Yeah, around the axon, but I'm thinking more like central nervous system or peripheral nervous system. Yeah, in the peripheral nervous system. So Schwann cells you find in the peripheral nervous system. The other kind of support cell that you see in the peripheral nervous system is, satellite cell. All right, so let me tell you where we find satellite cells. Here's a pretty nice illustration that shows a lot of the things that we've been talking about already. I see three neurons on this particular slide. All right, and I see a nice cross-section of the spinal cord. And here is a neuron bringing information into the central nervous system. What would we call this kind of neuron? That would be afferent or sensory. And tell me something about this neuron by shape. Yeah, it's unipolar. Unipolar. All right, here's the cell body in this ganglion right here. Right here is a nice multipolar neuron, which is an association neuron. And then this motor neuron, what's the shape of this motor neuron right here? Yeah, multipolar. Right, so the cell body's in the central nervous system and the axon goes into the peripheral nervous system. This is why I wanted to show you this slide. All right, all of these nerve cell bodies in this ganglion right here have company. Right, they can live a nice happy life if they're surrounded by neuroglia cells or neuroglial cells. And a special kind of neuroglia cell that is found in these ganglia along with the cell bodies of these unipolar neurons are what we call satellite cells. Right, I don't see on this illustration, but this is where we're going to look for satellite cells. They're going to be small cells that maintain the health of the cell body of this unipolar neuron, but we have a picture of it someplace. Where is it? Oh, here's a pretty good illustration. All right, so look at the yellow right here. What kind of cell is that by shape?
Unipolar.
That's unipolar, right? Here's just a single process coming off. Here you see a bunch of Schwann cells around the axon. Here are the satellite cells that surround the cell body of this unipolar neuron. Okay, so here are the nice satellite cells. But I also have a picture. Where's the picture of it? A micrograph. Right here. Okay, so here's the cell body of a neuron. And all of these dark spots right here are the nuclei of these satellite cells. And the reason why they were called satellite cells was because way back when people were interested in biology, they were also interested in looking up at the stars. And what are some of the easiest things to see when you look up in the sky? Well, what's the easiest thing when you look at up at, in the sky at night? Yeah, the moon. That's pretty easy. And then the next easiest thing would be stars. But there's something in between stars and the moon. There's something that's usually a little bit brighter than a star up there. Like the planets, yeah, like Jupiter, Venus, and planets. And when people would take out their telescopes and look at the planets, the really, really bright stars, they would see bright spots around the planets, like Jupiter. And so those are called satellites. And it looks just like this, right? So they call these things satellite cells. So they help promote the function of the cell body of those cells. Okay. So let's go back to this picture here. So what part of the nervous system is spinal cord that I'm circling?
Central.
That's central. And right about here is the line of demarcation between central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. So these ganglia are where? In the peripheral nervous system or central nervous system? They're peripheral nervous system. So those satellite cells are located where? In the ganglia, which is what? Central or peripheral nervous system? That's a peripheral nervous system. Okay. So as far as the support cells are concerned, we have two kinds of support cells in the peripheral nervous system. We've got the satellite cells, and what's another kind that wraps itself around these axons right here? The Schwann cells, right? Okay, so two cells we find in the PNS that are support cells, or neuroglia, the satellite and the Schwann cells. All right, so let's talk about the support cells that are in the central nervous system. They're going to perform some of the same kinds of functions. All right, so where do we have those at? Oop, I passed it by. Here are the four kinds of cells that are neuroglia in the CNS. And when I say CNS, what does that mean to you?
Central.
Yeah, central nervous system. Brain and spinal cord are where you're going to find these. All right, so let's start with the last one right here. Look, it's wrapping something around this axon right here. What does that remind you of? It reminds you of a Schwann cell, right? And what is the chemical that a Schwann cell is wrapping around that axon? Myelin. Yeah, myelin. So this oligodendrocyte is analogous to a Schwann cell, but the oligodendrocyte is found only in the? Oh, I don't have it on this slide, but you're right, central nervous system. There's another difference. One oligodendrocyte can wrap myelin sheaths around many different axons, but a Schwann cell can only do it around one axon. So that's kind of an important difference. And it helps regulate the flow of electricity down an axon. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, okay, how that does that. So there are gaps between oligodendrocytes, so there are nodes of RONVA as well in the neurons, these axons right here in the central nervous system, just like in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so from this slide, what do I want you to know about oligodendrocyte? Where do you find it?
Central
nervous system. Is it a neuron or a neuroglia?
Neuroglia,
and it wraps what around an axon?
Myelin,
which is insulation, right? So that's what I want you to know about this cell right here. Okay. All right, here's another kind of cell. And here is a neuron in yellow. Okay, here we have a blood vessel in blue. And notice that this cell has a bunch of rays sticking off of it. And when somebody first looked at this cell, it kind of reminded them of looking at a star or something with light rays coming out of it. So they call it an astrocyte. And this astrocyte has some, and these are processes, right? These things that are poking out of the cell body of an astrocyte. Some of these processes go over and wrap themselves around this capillary. And what's in this capillary right here? What is blood? There's blood. What is blood bringing to the brain? Oxygen, so that these cells can stay alive, but also nutrients like glucose, right? So the job of this astrocyte is to take nutrients that are in this blood vessel and look what it can do to it. It can absorb these nutrients and carry it directly to this neuron right here and then give it to the neuron, because here's another process touching this neuron. So it forms a really nice functional bridge for bringing nutrients to the neuron from the blood. That's one important job of this astrocyte right here. All right, another job of an astrocyte is that, think about the function of the brain. Is it important to have a nice functioning brain? What would happen if all of a sudden I went poof and I could stop the function of your brain? What would happen to you? Well, you would just pass out, right? Your head would hit the table, and then it would bounce off of that, and hit the chair, and bounce off of that, and hit the floor, right? So you need to have a functioning brain every second of your life, whether you're asleep or awake or whatever, because it's regulating all kinds of things in your body. All right. So the brain is very sensitive. It's highly metabolic. It needs oxygen and nutrients. But, you know, a lot of times when we eat something, we eat harmful products. Like, name something that's harmful that you eat.
French fries.
Okay, French fries. There's probably, yeah, there's chemicals in there when you fry something, okay? And even if you eat healthy things like vegetables, there are pesticides in vegetables, and even plants make things that animals don't want to eat, poisons for animals, because plants don't want to be eaten by animals, right? So they make things to help deter them from being eaten, toxins, all right? So we eat things that have toxins in them all the time, and they get absorbed into, from our digestive tract into our circulatory system. And if those toxins can go from the circulatory system into the brain just easily like that, right, that could kill you, right? That could harm your brain function. So these astrocytes wrap themselves around blood vessels, number one, bringing good nutrients into the neuron, but it also forms a barrier keeping harmful products out of the brain. We call that the blood-brain barrier. So astrocytes make a barrier to keep harmful substances in your blood and out of the brain, number one. And number two, to take important compounds that your brain needs from the blood and give it directly to neurons so that they don't starve to death. So that's a pretty important job of this astrocyte right here. So where do you find this astrocyte, PNS or CNS? Yeah, central nervous system. We don't have it in the peripheral nervous system. Another thing that these astrocytes do, which is pretty amazing, right, is that for years and years and years, people were very interested in neurons because they transmit information from one part of your body to the other, and we weren't very concerned about neuroglia. We didn't think they had an important function. But these astrocytes right here do tell how neurons should connect up to each other, what neurons should communicate with what neurons. And as a matter of fact, some of these astrocytes can even make certain parts of your brain grow, which is really important. All right, so people are becoming very interested in not just neurons and how they function, but also neuroglia, because the astrocytes determine what the network is like inside your brain, which means what? Basically your intelligence and what you do with information, how you process information. And as a matter of fact, let's just think of this for a second. If you were to walk around with a 5-pound weight all day long and contract your biceps, flexing your forearm, what would happen to your biceps? It'd get big and strong, right? Okay, it would grow, it'd get bigger and stronger. What would happen to those bones right there? If you were to stress those bones all day long by flexing your forearm with that weight, they get bigger and thicker too, right? That's how you protect yourself from osteoporosis, right? It would get bigger and stronger. And as a matter of fact, when you use your brain, when you stress your brain, exercise your brain, guess what happens to your brain? It gets bigger and stronger too. It doesn't get bigger physically, but the numbers of connections between neurons increases. So after you take a pretty rigorous course, like, can you think of a rigorous class maybe you've taken in your past?
Anatomy.
Like maybe anatomy? Okay, you're always working with your brain constantly. Working with your brain, working your brain, working your brain. Guess what happens to your brain? It makes new connections and you actually get smarter. So the brain that you're going to have after you're done with this class is nothing like the brain that you had before you take this class. You call that plasticity. Your brain actually changes, just like your muscles, just like your bones. And it's these little astrocytes right here that most enhance how your brain grows and changes to different activity levels. All right, so that astrocyte's pretty amazing right there. All right, so don't forget, all of these slides are central nervous system. Another one is this microglia cell. Almost looks like an astrocyte. It's got all these little processes, dendritic processes on it. These right here are crawling around inside your brain all the time. Okay? I know that sounds pretty gross, but that's really a good thing because every once in a while you might get something in your brain that doesn't belong there. Okay? Like what? Like maybe, it could be a worm or a fungus or something like that. Hopefully not. Those are really tough. But maybe a virus or a bacteria, right? or maybe even a tumor cell, a brain tumor, and it's the job of these microglia cells to kill things, to kill cells that are in your brain that don't belong there, like bacteria, virus. What do you call that when you get a bacterial infection of the brain? That would be meningitis. And you could tell me, is that fun or not? That's not fun, right? Because you need that brain every second of your life, right? So that's really dangerous in a hurry. Same thing for viral infections of the brain. The other thing is that probably all of us have had a brain tumor at some point in our life, but it has never grown because why? These microglia cells recognized it as not being a normal part of your brain and then phagocytized those cells, and you're fine. All right, so that's actually pretty fascinating. It would be really nice to be able to take somebody that has a brain tumor that might be life-threatening and train these microglia cells to recognize that tumor, and that would be like a magic bullet just to kill that particular tumor, right? Just that some tumors have figured out a way to defeat these cells, and then it becomes a problem for that individual. All right, what's the last cell? Who can say the name of this last one? Okay, you're really close. Where, I tell you what, where do we find this cell right here? The last one. Well, you see, it looks like an epithelium. That's really nice. That's really good thinking. But central nervous system. Okay, central. All of these cells right here are in the central nervous system. And the last ones are what we call ependymal cells. Okay, it's got a little swing to it, ependymal cell. And we're going to see maybe on Wednesday that there are cavities inside our brain that are filled with fluid. All right, and we call that cerebrospinal fluid. We'll talk about the functions of those cavities. Okay, and so there are spaces deep inside our brain that are filled with fluid, and sometimes you can have an infection of that fluid that you don't want getting into your brain proper. So these ependymal cells, right, again, form a barrier between the fluid in those cavities and the brain tissue themselves. All right, and also, these ependymal cells, well, this fluid in these cavities has to come from somewhere. Like a joint, you have fluid in your joints. What do you call that fluid in your joints? Synovial fluid. Where does that fluid come from? It just doesn't pop up. It comes from someplace. The synovial membrane secretes fluid into the synovial cavity, right? So in order to have this fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, in those cavities in your brain, it's got to come from someplace. Guess where it comes from? These ependymal cells. And we're going to see exactly where those locations are. They form what we call a choroid plexus that secretes cerebrospinal fluid into the cavities inside our brain. All right. So as a group, these four cells, where do you find them? These four types? Central nervous system. And you could group all four of these cells as what kind of cell? Neuroglia. Right? You could say support cell, but more often than that, people call them neuroglia cells or neuroglial cells. All right, so I do want you to know the names of these cells by their shape. Right, I think these are exam figures, if you printed out your exam figures already. Right, so I might put this microglia cell on the test and ask you, what's the name of the cell by its shape? But I might also ask you, what's the function? So what's the function of this microglia cell right here?
Macrophage.
It's a macrophage, so you could say it's an immune cell. Can you recall what the name of the immune cell in your epidermis is called? And remember, it had all those little processes sticking out of it going between cells? It was called a Langerhans cell. Langerhans cell. So this is kind of the counterpart of that Langerhans cell. Okay. And again, it's to protect you from tumors and infection and all that kind of stuff. And you could certainly argue very efficiently that the most important system in your body is your immune system, right? Just protecting you from infection all the time. Okay. All right, so let's see. Oh, now let's talk a little bit more about the function. No, let's talk about the synapse. I want to talk about the synapse first, and then we're going to talk about the function of that, of these neuroglia cells a little bit. All right, so this slide right here, just a little review. What kind of neuron is that?
Unipolar.
Unipolar. Okay, and is this found completely in the CNS or in the peripheral nervous system?
Peripheral
nervous system. And you see these support cells right here, which are? Schwann cells, and you also see the satellite cells right here. Ah, what's the function of this neuron right here? Afferent, efferent, or association neuron? It is afferent. It's sensory. Remember, afferent is sensory, efferent is motor. Okay. All right, now here you can see how myelin is wrapped around the cell. Where do I want to go? Well, let's see. What was I going to show you? Dang. Ah, synapse. Thank you. Thank you. Synapse. Where's the synapse at? Ah, here we go. Okay, so a synapse is a structural and functional unit of communication between two cells. So it's how one cell is going to communicate with another. And there are two kinds of synapses that we're going to talk about in this class. First kind is what we call a chemical synapse. And the second kind is what we call an electrical synapse. And electrical synapses are pretty rare in the body, but they're really super important in the heart. So when we start talking about the heart, I'm going to talk about electrical synapses. The most common kind is an electrical synapse that uses a chemical, all right, to go from one cell to another cell. And that chemical is going to change the response in the receiving cell. So here we have a picture of what kind of neuron does this look like right here?
Multipolar,
bunch of dendrites and a cell body, and then here's the axon. Here is the end of a cell that's going to communicate with this multipolar neuron. And that kind of looks red to me. All right, so here we have a bunch of synapses. So this red cell is going to release a chemical that is going to stimulate the gold neuron. All right, so here are a bunch of synapses. Here is what, blue?
Yeah.
Okay, so here is a blue axon terminus that is going to communicate with the gold neuron. And then we have like green or pink. What color is this right here?
Green.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, turquoise, huh? Okay, so here you have a green neuron that's communicating with a gold neuron. So these are all synapses right here. So we can classify synapses depending on where they're releasing that chemical onto the receiving cell or the gold neuron. All right, so here's an axon terminus. What part of the gold cell is this right here? This is dendrite. So this is what we call an axodendritic synapse. Axo because the signal is coming from this axon and it's stimulating these dendrites. What part of the gold neuron is this right here?
Soma,
right, or cell body. All right, so these synapses right here, we call these axosomatic. So signals are coming from an axon and stimulating the cell body of this receiving neuron. And these synapses right here are what we call axoaxonic. Why do we call these axoaxonic synapses? Yeah, because this axon terminus is stimulating the axon of the gold neuron right here. Okay. Now, which way can signals move down this gold neuron? We said dendrite, cell body, down the axon, one-way street. And you know what? Through a synapse, information can only go in one direction as well. It can only go from an axon terminus that we see either in red, blue, or this green right here into another neuron, either at the cell body or at these dendrites or maybe at the beginning of an axon right here. So see these arrows? It means information can only flow in that direction. It can't flow from a dendrite back up into this axon right here. It's a one-way street. So let's look and see why that is. Oh, one last thing. What do we call this junction right here? Yeah, that's a synapse. Yeah, that's a synapse, and in particular, axosomatic synapse, but generally, that's a synapse. So we said information flows one way. Oh, I forget what I was going to tell you about this thing. Okay, it will come to me on the next slide. Oh, yes, I remembered what it was. Okay, so here we have a synapse, right, between the red and the gold cell. We can classify these two different cells, not just by their color, okay, but we give them a name. Since this is the synapse right here, the red cell is what we call the presynaptic neuron, right, because it's coming before the synapse. Remember, because information only flows in one way. So if the red neuron is the presynaptic neuron, what about the gold? How would you talk about that one? Yeah, postsynaptic neuron, right? So here's the presynaptic, here's the postsynaptic neuron. All right, just some terminology. All right, so let's really zoom in. Now here is the synapse. You can see a bunch of dendrites, cell body and the axon, like Schwann cells. Right, and then here's a little swelling at the end of an axon terminus right here. So where I have the cursor, how would you talk about this cell right here?
Multipolar.
Yeah, it's a multipolar neuron. But think in terms of communication. Think in terms of a synapse. What kind of cell is this one? Is this a presynaptic cell or the postsynaptic cell? That's what I'm getting at. This is the presynaptic cell. So this one here is the postsynaptic cell. So remember, information can only go from the presynaptic into the postsynaptic. And in order to understand that, we got to zoom into this area right here, which is called the synapse, right? So here's the synapse. So let's zoom in. Here we are right here. What does this kind of remind you of? Does this remind you of anything? The neuromuscular junction, okay? And the neuromuscular junction was a neuron, and then this part over here was the skeletal muscle. How did the skeletal muscle get stimulated by this neuron? What did the neuron do to this muscle down over here? It released something. It released a chemical called acetylcholine, right? So that was a chemical synapse. The neuromuscular junction is a chemical synapse. And the same thing with this neuron-neuron interface right here. This is a chemical synapse because here are synaptic vesicles filled with that signaling molecule, and a general name for that signaling molecule that's contained in all these synaptic vesicles is called neurotransmitter. And do you know any specific names of neurotransmitters? I just said one. And that works in a synapse between two neurons as well in some circumstances, like acetylcholine. There are other kinds of neurotransmitters. Anybody know other names of neurotransmitters? You probably read about some in the newspaper. Like dopamine is an important one. Norepinephrine is an important one. Serotonin is another important one. So there are various kinds of neurotransmitters that are used in the brain, but we don't talk about all their uses in this class. What's a good class you would want to take to learn something about more about neurotransmitters and what their function is?
Physiology.
Yeah, I gave it away. Physiology class, right? Okay. All right, but we got to start off here just looking at a synapse. So if there is an impulse that comes down this axon, gets to this swelling at the end of the axon on the axon terminus, right? Sometimes this swelling right here is what we call a terminal button. Sometimes we call it a bouton terminale. Sometimes we call it an axon terminus. It goes by a whole bunch of different names, but it's just a little swelling. And why is it kind of swollen there? Because it contains mitochondria for doing what? Making a lot of energy in the form of ATP. It's got a lot of synaptic vesicles, and to move these vesicles around, it requires ATP from these mitochondria. Okay, so the axon terminus is swollen because it contains all of these organelles. All right, so let's talk about how this synapse works. If there is an electrical impulse that comes down the axon, the electrical impulse flows over the Bouton terminale, and there are special little tunnels that open up that allow calcium to enter the cell right here, just like at the neuromuscular junction. And that calcium ion causes the fusion of these synaptic vesicles to this membrane right here. All right, and this is the membrane on which cell? The presynaptic or the postsynaptic cell? The presynaptic cell. So synaptic vesicles fuse to the presynaptic membrane, and then it exocytoses neurotransmitter into the space between the neurons, which we call the synaptic cleft. And then that neurotransmitter diffuses from the presynaptic cell to the postsynaptic cell, and then there are receptors on the postsynaptic membrane that bind the neurotransmitter, and that starts another electrical signal on what cell? The postsynaptic cell. Okay, so information is transmitted along the whole length of the presynaptic cell via the dendrite, cell body, and axon is what kind of signal? And I want you to think of either an electrical signal or a chemical signal. How is information transmitted really fast through a neuron? As an electrical signal. We're going to talk about how that electrical signal develops in just a little bit, all right? But through the presynaptic neuron, it travels as an electrical signal. But across the synapse, what does it get converted into?
Chemical.
A chemical signal, namely a neurotransmitter of some kind. And what does that do to the postsynaptic cell? It starts another electrical signal in the postsynaptic cell. All right, so let's do that again. How is information transmitted in the presynaptic neuron? As an electrical signal. Through the synapse, it gets converted into a chemical signal, and then it gets reconverted into a electrical signal. So information goes electrical and chemical and then electrical once again. All right, so that's going to be really important because this allows for precise control of these neuronal circuits as opposed to if it was just a electrical synapse. So we're going to see how that operates inside the heart. All right, so here is another example of calcium. Calcium chemically is abbreviated Ca, and we call it an electrolyte because it's an ion. It actually has a couple positive charges on it, and this is the thing that helps make our bones strong. But what else is calcium ion important for? For chemical synapses, so that neurons can communicate with each other. And if you had a choice, what would you rather have this calcium going to? Making your bones strong or so that neurons can communicate with each other? Yeah, for what we call synaptic transmission. All right, so that's another thing. When our bodies start to run out of calcium as we get older, your body makes that same decision. Much more important to have a functioning brain than super strong bones. Okay, and so your body goes and gets calcium out of your bones. They become softer or they become more brittle. What's that condition called?
Osteoporosis.
How can you protect yourself from osteoporosis?
Exercise.
Yeah, just like your brain, right? Exercise and proper calcium in your diet. All right, so everything that we talked about is right in here so far. All right, so now I want to talk about this for maybe about 5 minutes. We're not going to get done with this chapter today, I don't think. Okay. All right, so calcium sometimes we call it an ion. Calcium with these two positive charges right here, ion. And sometimes we call that an electrolyte. And notice how I spell that, L-Y-T-E, not L-I-G-H-T. Sometimes you might be working in a hospital or emergency room or something, and somebody's heart is doing funny things and their brain is doing funny things because of these ions are not in the proper concentrations. So somebody might yell out, "We need some lights on this person, stat." Stat means right away. We need some lights on this person, stat. And if you're working in the emergency room, what are you going to do? Are you going to get some like flashlights or lights and shine it on the person, or what are you going to do? When they say lights, we need some lights because you don't have time to really talk. You're talking what? Electrolytes. They were interested in measuring various ion concentrations inside somebody. But not just calcium. What's another kind of electrolyte? Something that, another compound that has electrical charge on it. There is? All right. There is potassium. It has a positive charge. Potassium is abbreviated with a K. All right. And sodium is another important electrolyte. All right. They all have positive charges. And that's because in some language, sodium is called natrium. Probably Greek or something, or Latin, I'm not sure. And potassium spelled with a K because it's really kalium. You don't have to know any of that in this class. But that's how they, you know, instead of making that S and P, would have made a lot of sense in English. But that's not how they were named. All right, so those are important electrolytes. Okay. And because those things have electrical charges on them, let me show you this slide right here. Because those have electrical charges on them. Maybe I like this slide right here. All right, so here, got it on the slide. Here we got what kind of cell, neuroglia or neuron?
Neuron.
What kind of neuron?
A multipolar.
What's a good function of a multipolar neuron?
Motor.
Motor neuron, okay. Well, now here's this really strange thing about not just neurons, but all cells in your body. All cells in your body act like batteries. We're very electrical beings. Maybe you really haven't thought about that yet. Okay? And we're all cells act like batteries because of these concentrations of electrolytes or ions that we find in the cell or maybe outside the cell. So here we have a neuron that's at rest. It's not doing anything. And all cells at rest have a high sodium concentration on the outside, have a high potassium concentration on the inside. And this slide is kind of labeled a little bit wrong because what is this one right here? What should that one really be? That should be a plus sign. Okay? And this one right here should be a plus sign as well. All right? It just didn't come out on the slide correctly. All right, so what do you have to know in this class? At rest, where do you have high sodium concentration? On the outside of the cell. And so you got to know what the Na stands for, sodium. You got to know what K stands for, potassium. And where is potassium high when the cell's at rest? It's high on the inside. All right, and because you have this uneven distribution of ions across this thing right here, what is this thing called? That's the cell membrane, right? That's just the cell membrane. Since you have a difference of ion concentrations across the cell membrane, you have high positive charge outside the cell, but what's inside the cell?
Negative.
High negative charge, and when you have something in two different locations where there's positive charge in one location and negative on another, what do we call that thing? You got them in your cell phone. That's a battery. So all cells act like a battery because they're separating charge. And what do you do with that battery, or even the battery that you have in your car? It's what? It's an energy source. It's used to do something, like to power your cell phone or your calculator or whatever. Right? So the battery nature of all cells is used as an energy source for transmitting information. And I don't have time to tell you right now, but where we're going to start next time is what forms an action potential. Okay? Because the battery, it's going to change. All right, so next time we're going to start with an action potential. Yeah. An action potential in motion down an axon is a nerve impulse. Yeah, so an action potential as it's moving is a nerve impulse. Yeah, that's the terminology we use. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.